Hello and welcome to another episode of the IAAF Inside Athletics podcast. I'm here in Aarhus with a very special guest today, Dan Vernon.
Hello.
Dan, how is your experience of Denmark so far?
Fantastic. Yeah. Lovely city. And the event yesterday was just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
So Dan has been working with the IAAF in as like a videographer, photographer role. And you do a lot of that on the circuit and a lot of the road races as well.
Yeah.
How does, was this your first cross country?
It's my first world cross country, but I've photographed cross country in the past, but mainly at home back in England. But it's my first world cross, so it's just awesome experience, yeah.
We've got a lot coming up on today's show. We're going to do a full review of Aarhus 2019. We also have a special guest in the shape of Shalane Flanagan, who gives an amazing interview. We talk cross country, where it all started for her, along with her New York Marathon victory, Beijing Olympic medals, and the, iconic in many ways, Boston Marathon from last year. So yeah, it's a really great interview, so stay tuned. So, it's still hot on everybody's mind. Aarhus, it was, some say, the toughest course in the history of cross country. What do you reckon, Dan?
I'd say it was. I mean, the only advantage, I think, was that the weather was okay. I think if you'd have thrown snow or rain or anything into the mix there, it would have been something too difficult for a lot of people, I think. But the course itself... Yeah, I can't see a tougher course in the past now.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting was some of the LOC staff. They said that on this day last year it was snowy.
Yeah,
so that could have gone completely south. But fortunately, we had really beautiful weather all the days leading up to it, really. Yeah. And it just proved for it a really amazing day. And the I felt when we were walking around, it felt like a festival, the whole area.
Yeah, definitely. It was as soon as you arrived, you felt like you were turning up to a music festival. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the same sort of vibe, and I think everybody bought into it. And you know that I think they said there was like 15,000 people turned up. Mm-hmm. And then you've obviously got all the athletes and supporting each other as well. So there was a real carnival atmosphere, flags everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, there was an Ethiopian guy. He must have run about 15K just with a flag just following.
I think I saw him.
It was just incredible. Yeah, beer tent up at the top. It was, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, the beer tent was a personal highlight. When the mass race started, once all the elites had finished, there was a mass race relay, and there was a guy in the first leg who ran to the top of the hill, got to the beer tent, and his mate handed him a pint of beer. He necked it, and then he carried on running. Like, full respect to him. But yeah, the course was, and everybody was saying it, the course was pretty brutal and unforgiving, but there was still some amazing racing, and I think it added just... a whole new spectacle to cross country, because we're used to these kind of flat golf courses, yeah, and that
absolutely.
Kind of thing. But I think this hopefully should be the way forward for cross country in the future.
Yeah, I think so. I just, you know, it was so unusual, and the venue itself to throw the course up over the roof of the museum. There had been a lot of thought gone into it. You know, once they'd picked the location, and it's a lot of people have been saying it, how it's difficult to show how steep it is, how difficult it was, and it's really it's a difficult thing to try and convey to people who didn't actually see it. Mm-hmm. How difficult it really was and how steep that roof section was. It was just unreal.
Yeah, I mean, there was no pause for breath, no break. I mean, we said the only maybe slight break was the beer tent, where it was remotely flat for like a minute, and then the rest of it, it's just you're constantly going up, down.
One of the coaches was saying, he said, you can go up a hill too fast once, but you can't do it twice, because there's just no place to recover. So if you get your pace a little wrong, you know, you've got a slight chance before you get to the next one, but you do that twice and you're just done, you're cooked. So I think it was really key for so many people to just control
back,
the pace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we saw a lot of people fall victim to that, like people who did start off particularly well and then they would drop off, because you cannot... You cannot overcook a course like that.
No, the positions were changing. Every lap you would see people come past and everything was shifting. People were overtaking each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd even get someone going up the hill would overtake someone and then be retaken on the downhill,
yeah,
you know, like 30 seconds later.
I think that is also what I really liked about it, the fact that there were so many different types of, I don't know, obstacles in that sense and how different athletes favour different ones. So
Absolutely. Yeah,
it was cool seeing all the positions change. You were out on the course, running around, taking photos of everybody. What was your personal highlight in terms of obstacles and parts of the course?
It's a tricky one, really. I quite like the start, just because it was just this relentless hill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think everyone was drawn to the different features, which were great. But for me, that, I think they said it was 75 feet or something like that. It was just a long, long slog for a few hundred metres, just to really set the tone for what people were in store for. So for me, that long straight at the start uphill was, mm-hmm. was really cool. Yeah.
There was a lot of great racing as well. The first race was the mixed relay, who Ethiopia won, which I don't think people were expecting. I think a lot of people tipped perhaps Kenya to win because they had Elijah Menangoy, Conseslus Kipruto on their team. And they were up there for like the first few legs, but then they ended up, I think they got a bronze medal in the end, they were beaten by the Moroccan team.
Yeah, I think, like you said, the Kenyan team just looked so strong on paper, and I think everyone was, you know, tipping them to win. But if you look across the board, maybe if you remove the men's senior race, the Ethiopians were so strong in all of the races, and I'm not sure why, but they really came with a lot of talent, and the course seemed to suit them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was an incredible win and a really cool race, actually, to have that relay, especially in that environment and that course. It was perfect for it. You know, seeing a changeover in the cross-country setting was brilliant.
Yeah, and how, because I wasn't up close and personal like you, how were they changing over?
You sort of got, it was just a chalked-off section of the course, probably, must have been about 20 metres.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally, you'd see it was just like you do it on the track with a 400 with a set changeover distance. And yeah, it seemed to work really well because there was...
They weren't using a baton though, were they?
No, it was. I couldn't really see what it was. It was
like a wristband or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I
think if you're going to run an entire cross-country course, you don't want to have a baton with you. So it was something
you
nice.
You get to the top of the hill and drop it. And everyone's all the way back down again. After that, it was the women's under 20 race. Drama followed big time. It was a fantastic race. The finish, there was about four or five of them belting it down the finish line. And there was Chebet was out in front of the Kenyan. And then the two Ethiopians were closing down on that. And then I was pretty much at the finish line. And I thought he won just from, I don't know, looking at it.
Yeah.
But then there was angles and that kind of thing. And then it came upon the system that the Ethiopians both came past her.
Yeah.
And then we were like, we thought it was a bit weird, but it was one of those things that you just don't know because you're not like dead on with the finish line. So we weren't really sure. But then afterwards, obviously, it was announced that Chebet did actually win. And it was just a bit of a mistake, a misunderstanding. And I spoke to one of the guys in the competition department afterwards, and they said what happened was... whilst Chebet's torso may have gone over first, the athletes are tracked by Chipper in their spikes.
Right, okay.
And what they think happened was the Ethiopians' feet both went over the line first.
Right.
They were finishing faster, but it's done on torso. And I think just people don't, in cross country, unlike track, people just don't expect there to be that type of finish.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's looked into as hard. But
if you see the actual photo, the photograph from the timing guys, it's quite clear that she won. But like you say, because of the nature of it with the timing chips, there was a lot of confusion and the finish line. It's not like a defined finish line as much for us visually. So.
Yeah, it's like 2 meters long, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it was a great race nonetheless. The men's under 20 race was also pretty good. Ethiopia notched up another win with Milkesa Mengesha. Again, the Ethiopians, I think they won the team competition in that as well. Ethiopia did just really turn it up to these championships.
Yeah, they really did. Yeah.
And then along with that, the senior women's race was also brilliant as well. Seeing Helen Obiri, she was just so dominant the whole way through, so controlled. There was a moment, because we were sitting in the media tribune, and there was a few journalists that were saying, oh, I don't know if she's going to hold this, because she looked, maybe with one lap to go, like she was maybe done, but no, how wrong we were.
Yeah, it was just, it, she had, there was a couple of girls on her the entire time, and I remember she said in their interview after, she said she looked behind her and she could see these, what she called superstars behind her on a shoulder of these Ethiopians. But she said, I knew all along I had the kick. So I think she had a lot of confidence in herself, knowing that if she got to those closing stages, she was always going to take them. But it's a strange one, because I think it was, someone was saying about, they thought that the marathon, that the distance runners would have more of an advantage on this course, just pure endurance. Mm-hmm. But you look at it, and a lot of the races were won by people with that sheer speed. So it is interesting. It affected different people in different ways, I think.
Yeah, I do think that is the beauty of cross country, and a lot of people were saying it. It brings together people from 1500 metres all the way to the marathon, and you're kind of all at a level playing field. And different. It's interesting how different courses can affect different people. Yeah. But yeah, Helen, she was brilliant, and she's the first woman ever to win a world indoor title, a world outdoor title, and now a world cross country title.
Unreal.
But she said in the mix zone that she was one and done, so that's it. She's done cross country once, she's won it, and then she's not doing it again. And you know what? After seeing that course, I do not blame her.
Yeah.
And the only other person, I think the only other man to do it is Kenenisa Bekele.
Ah, right, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so wow. A prestigious group, anyway. Yeah. And moving on to the men's race, it was Joshua Cheptegei of Uganda and Jacob Kalimo. Brilliant race. Again, they were up against Geoffrey Kamara, who hasn't lost a world championship title that's not on a track. I know that sounds all weird to say. Basically, he's won every world half marathon and every world cross country championships there's been for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
So a pretty formidable competitor.
Yeah, just total dominance from him in the last few years, and I think he came into this in great shape, as did Joshua and Kipalima. I mean, Kipalima's, I can't remember how many races it is on the bounce he's won. He's been absolutely flying, such a young talent. I think, as you told me, he could have competed in the
under 20
race, but chose to go big, you know. And obviously, it worked out. He got a medal, but. What a race. I mean, you saw that front three, once they broke away in the last couple of laps, it just kept changing. Mm-hmm. You know, there would always be someone overtaking someone, and you thought Kipalima had it for a while, and, you know, it was just my favourite race, I think. There was such a story going on the entire way, and then that pace. I mean, when Joshua gets in full flight, it's quite a sight to behold, and he doesn't like the downhill so much. It's not his sort of preferred aspect. But to me, looking at him fly down those hills today, I think it really suited him.
Yeah, it was really quite a special race for Cheptegei. It was the first ever senior individual gold medal that Uganda have ever had at the World Cross Country Championships. So to not only get the gold, but then get the silver, and they are both
the team.
So and they won the team, yeah. And they packed incredibly. It was something like five inside the top 10.
Yeah,
so the Ugandans did amazing, and they, as well as that, also they're both so young. Cheptegei is 22 years old. Kipalima, I think, is 18, 19 years mm-hmm. old. That's crazy. And they literally, they smashed everybody. And it's really exciting to see for the future of Ugandan distance running. Because Cheptegei, he came second to Mo Farah, right, in London 2017.
Yeah, and also did the double in the Commonwealths as well.
So potentially a warm favourite now, looking ahead to Doha.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he does. I don't know whether he'll double up or whether he'll just go for one, maybe the five, I'm not sure. We'll see what he chooses to do. But he's just an absolutely incredible, incredible talent. He had a tough year a year ago. He a really bad injury on his knee, and managed to come back and just take the world by storm, getting the 15K record late last year in Holland. He's an unbelievable talent. I think he's really starting to show it now. And I think, like you say, Doha, you know, could be where the world really sees what he can do.
Looking ahead, we've got a lot of stuff coming up on the roads as well. We've got the Boston Marathon around the corner, and you're going to be there, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks until Boston Marathon, and I think it looks to me like one of the best fields I've put together in a while. There's so many ex-champions, past champions from a Boston Marathon. So I think there's a lot of people that understand the course, that know the course, a lot of people going in really good shape, and I think it could be something quite special, because last year was just so unusual. You know, we went from You know, I went for a run a couple of days before in shorts and t-shirt, roasting hot, and then suddenly, you know, the world ends and it's, you know, the snow and sleet, and it was just such an unusual event, and it really affected the athletes, you know, badly. There were so many dropouts, especially from a lot of the East African athletes had to drop out, but Kawauchi just came home, and I think he's returning again to defend his title. Yeah, awesome. So it'll be quite a special race.
And the women's race was also pretty special as well. They had another American woman win, and there was an incredible story about that with Shalane Flanagan as well and Desi Linden. And fortunately, on today's episode, Shalane Flanagan is the guest, so you can hear that story from the woman herself. So we're now going to cross over to my chat with Shalane a few days before Aarhus. I'm in the Team USA hotel in Aarhus in Denmark with Shalane Flanagan. Shalane, welcome to the IWF podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Not a problem. So, Shalane, you're in Aarhus today, not actually as a competitor, but you're here supporting with Team USA. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, the last time I competed at World Cross was 2011, and it was a really great memory for me. I earned a bronze medal, and Team USA earned a bronze medal. So I'm really excited to be back. It's been a long time. But I am here primarily as a personal coach. I'm part of Bowerman Track Club, and I'm looking to become a full-time coach, transitioning out of athletics personally, from my competition level. But I'm here for the three Bowerman women, and I'm at the disposal of Team USA, whatever they need from me. I'm very happy to help. I just want, everyone to have their best race and hopefully get some people on the podium.
Awesome. So let's talk, you mentioned 2011 and 2010, actually, you competed in World Cross as well and you won a team medal, right?
Yes. I can't remember if it was 2010 or 2011, but yeah, Spain.
Yes. I was Googling earlier and I think I'm pretty sure it was 2010.
Oh, okay.
I love that you can't even remember.
It's been obviously a long time.
Yeah. So have you always enjoyed cross country?
Oh, I have. I think it's the purest form of our sport. I think it's a lot of where the people get introduced to running is through cross country at a young age. It just feels very like primal, running over hill and dale and running on the grass. And I think it's a beautiful part of our sport. Unfortunately, it's not as big as the marathoning world or track and field. Mm-hmm. So I love supporting this sport because I think it's really truly the introduction for a lot of people. Yeah. I think, whether they make it to the professional level or not, a lot of people over the world have run cross country. So it's very much a part of people's lives.
Yeah, that's so many people have said that. We were talking to Paul Turgot the other day, and he was just kept saying about how it is just like being at one with nature.
Yeah.
And so many people have said that, and I do kind of get that as well. Mm-hmm. So you said that you think we maybe got a team medal in 2010.
Yeah.
So what was that first experience like of, coming to a World Cross and getting a medal?
Yeah, we actually had earned a medal back in the day when they had 4K. It was 4K and 8K. Team USA, I'd been a part of another medal championship in France. Can't remember what year that one was. But yeah, Team USA is always like on the cusp of being right there for the medal hunt. Mm-hmm. So it's always fun when you come here and it's not as much that individual pressure. You have really this great energy of how well can the team do. And I've been fortunate to have been a part of two teams that medaled, and and so hopefully that just allows the crop of athletes now to realize that there is that potential, and East Africans are so good at cross country, and so but it gives them the hope and the belief that if they have a good day, anything is possible, and we have actual history of doing well here. So
you might kind of, the sprinters have to deal with it a lot where they do relays and you have to rely on other people. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you have to raise your game because there is the team performance up for grabs as well?
Yeah, I think everyone wants to have their best day, because if they do, that means, the overall arching goal, mm-hmm. Impacts everyone. And so I think it's such a positive type of pressure when you're hurting, you lean into the hurt a little bit more when you know that other people are depending upon you, and it makes it more fun. Mm-hmm. And having that, Team USA and that USA across your chest means a lot to people representing their country. So I think it brings the best out of everyone, having that team component.
Well, let's talk about 2011, which is when you actually got an individual medal.
Yeah.
What was that like, being able to climb onto a podium, as you said, against the East Africans and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it had been a dream of mine to medal at World Cross, but I thought, that's maybe one of the hardest stages, maybe even harder than the Olympics, because you really have every type of runner entering yeah. World Cross. You have a marathoner down to some really great 1500 meter runners, mm-hmm. and they're the best of the best. So, and you're bringing six for each country, and whereas on the track, you know, you only get three Kenyans, three Ethiopians, and yeah. You're bringing six for each country, so it's just even deeper. So my parents were both really great cross country runners. In fact, they met at a World Cross Country Championship in Scotland.
No way.
So the it runs it deep. Glasgow? I think so. I can't remember exactly. It was in the 70s. I'd have to look it up.
So I was, again, we have the IAAF had brought some ambassadors here. They brought John Treacy of Ireland, who won
in
Glasgow, and I was speaking to him.
So, funny. Yeah. So I think that's how that my parents met.
That's amazing.
So, you know, it runs deep in my family that they both were part of World Cross Country teams, and that's how they met. And so it was really important to me growing up, like if I ever got the chance to go to World Cross, like how incredible, like full circle moment for me to be back and to do well. And so when I in 2011 medaled, I was just flabbergasted. I could not believe I had medaled. Like mm-hmm. I had just put this race on such a pedestal because I just knew how hard it was. And my previous experiences were, you know, being, you know, anywhere from like maybe 8th to 20th and just running my guts out, and that just being so hard. So it seemed just unfathomable to medal at some point. But I felt phenomenal. I felt really good that day, really strong. I think the course played to my favor. I was a little bit more of a track runner, and that course in Spain was just really good footing, nice grass. We had to do quite a bit of hurdling, and that's actually how I placed third, is I was able to hurdle better over the last K than the Ethiopian woman in front of me, and that's how I overcame third. But it's, you know, it was a dream come true, and it's still to this day one of my proudest achievements. You know, people always think, oh, you know, winning New York City Marathon, that's really big, but in my heart of hearts, I actually think my World Cross medal means the most to me, and just especially because of my parents, and that's how they, you know, really were able to compete at the highest level for them, was in World Cross.
That's amazing. What an amazing story. Yeah. As if they were both cross-country runners. Yeah. Were they both American as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. Cool. Yes. So you spoke about how that's one of your proudest achievements. I mean, you've also had success on the track as well. Mm-hmm. You went to Beijing Olympics, mm-hmm. and that's an amazing story in itself. So
yeah.
Is that your first Olympic Games?
No, my first, so I'm kind of old. my first was 2004 Athens.
Okay.
And then, but that was such a pivotal moment to just be at the Olympics and have that experience. Mm-hmm. Because then it just grew that desire to do something at the Olympics, not just be a participant, to actually be a medal contender. So yeah, it culminated in Beijing for me, which was a great opportunity, and I ran two events there and came away with one medal. So that, yeah, I mean, that it's, you know, there's so many great athletes who have come through our sport that actually don't have Olympic medals. So you know, like a Paula Radcliffe, like she doesn't have an Olympic medal, but she's like one of the greatest ever. And so I really hold that really near and dear to my heart that I was able to have that moment.
And what was it like competing at an Olympic Games and to get a medal? Like the sheer velocity of the achievement.
It's just like perfect timing. Everything has to come together on that one day at that one moment, and you know, it's so, to have it come true is, you know, I look at like just so many variables that could derail you. And I actually got food poisoning a few days prior to me medaling, and so I wasn't even sure I was going to start. And so it's just crazy how things work out because, you know, I went from an ultimate low thinking, oh my gosh, this isn't going to happen for me. I'm not going to even really be able to compete. And then earning a medal was just, you know, mind-blowing. And then I've been to four Olympics, and you know, I've been in even better shape probably than I was in Beijing, but didn't come away with a medal. So it just shows you how tricky it is to have the stars aligned to attain that kind of level of achievement.
And what point did you think during that race in Beijing that you had a medal?
It was such a fast race. It was actually at the time an Olympic record how fast we ran. The winner, Dababa, she was like right under 30 minutes. So, you know, and I set an American record and PB'd by like 15 seconds. So everyone was just running out of their mind fast. So we were passing so many people that I actually, lapping people, we were just so fast that I actually was losing count of where I was. And so I wasn't sure. I thought I had passed Lynette Masai to overcome, you know, take over a third spot with 800 to go, but I wasn't quite sure because we were lapping so many people. Mm-hmm. So when I finished, there's photos of me just holding up like three fingers, like, did I get third? Like, I was just in awe that that had happened, and I didn't want to celebrate and then like end up being fourth or something. It wasn't really like I thought over the last 800 meters. I ran as scared as possible to just like thinking, okay, I think this is third spot. I think this is bronze medal, but not until like it was confirmed when mm-hmm. I finished. But yeah.
So at that point, were you with the Bowerman Track Club?
I actually wasn't. We didn't form Bowerman until right after Beijing. So I was with a different coach at that time, and then mm-hmm. I moved out to Oregon to work with my current coach, Jerry Schumacher, and that was the beginning of Bowerman. It was in 2009.
Yeah, I mean, Bowerman's such like an interesting track sensation. Can you tell me a bit more about it and how it all came about?
Yeah, basically in 2009, Nike decided to bring out Jerry Schumacher, who is the head coach at the University of Wisconsin, bring him out and a few of his men and start up another track group mm-hmm. In Portland. And at the time, they had no women. Jerry had never coached a female athlete before.
Oh,
but
wow.
I said, you know, I'm interested. I want to start to tackle even longer distances than 10K, and I think you're the coach to do it, to help me achieve this goal. And so I came out to Oregon and started working with Jerry, and it was a painful process because I wasn't a very high mileage athlete, and he really said, if you're going to become a marathoner, you have to run a lot. And so I was the only Bowerman female athlete and the first female athlete that he coached. And over the course of the years, I would just plead with him to expand the women's side. And he's like, oh, I'm not a women's coach. I'm not sure I can handle women. And I just said, please, I'm dying for some company. I can't do this anymore by myself. And so finally, I cracked him over the last couple years. And now we've expanded to just an amazing group of women, all highly competitive, but just really sweet women and very supportive group. And I really, truly believe it's how you get the best out of yourself as an athlete is surrounding yourself with the best. You know, you just are constantly pushed to another level and the expectations are so high, and we have a lot of fun in the process, so that's always good.
I mean, there is so many of like quality female athletes in that group. It's almost a bit like a sorority with how many of you there are. Like, does it feel like a sisterhood kind of between you all?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, we truly are best friends, and we work together. It's a unique dynamic. And, you know, I think with the leadership that we have, that's what makes it work, because a lot of people are like, how does that work with such highly, highly competitive women? You know, it could go sour or go south kind of quickly just with that fierce level of competitiveness. But I think because we have such great leadership, it works out really well.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay, cool. So following obviously your amazing track career, you kind of slowly transitioned to road running, marathon running. You had kind of early success at the marathon. You got you came second in the New York Marathon, right?
Yeah.
How was that experience?
Yeah, you know, the marathon is a scary distance, especially the first time. So, you know, my first marathon in New York, I was just praying I'd finish.
Yeah.
So to come in second kind of validated my belief that I could be a marathoner. Mm-hmm. You know, I always thought maybe I had that potential within me, but not until you go race it do you really get a true taste of what it's like. But yeah, I had a first experience really great. Clearly, I think New York is a good fit for me, because then the next time I ran it, I won, and then this last fall I was third. So I've finished on the podium every time I've run New York, and so obviously you like to put in the work and see good results. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just spurred my belief that I could become a marathoner, and since then I went to two Olympics with the marathon, and yeah, I love the event. It's a lot of work, though.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
I'm sure. I'm really sure. I mean, you wouldn't catch me doing it, but yeah. So, obviously, you spoke about winning the New York Marathon. It was 2017, right?
Yes.
So,
yeah.
Going into that, did you believe that you could win that race?
I did. You know, I believed there was that potential, but mm-hmm. I was up against a really stellar field, Mary Gattoni, who'd already won it three times, and is, you know, she's basically has a world record with women's only marathon. So, you know, 2:17, and the fastest I'd ever run is a 2:21. So on paper, she's the better athlete. But I knew I was in the best shape of my life and was feeling really strong and good. And I knew that in any given day, and the marathon is just such a fickle event, that anything could happen. But yeah, I knew I had a chance in my training as it was culminating, and my coach was just saying, you know, I don't know. He's like, anyone, you know, that runs the type of race that you're good at, which is a little bit more of a slower race and a really hard finish. That's mm-hmm. more my specialty. He's like, I don't think anyone can really handle you in a situation like that. And the race unfolded exactly as I would want it to. And so it really played into my favor.
Awesome. Yeah. So at what point doing that did you think, okay, this is actually on here, I'm gonna run away with this?
Well, in the marathon you never can ever tell until you cross the finish line, because yeah. you just, anything can happen. You can feel good, great one moment and on top of the world, and the next you're just humbled within mm-hmm. steps, so you never know. But with 5K to go, I pulled away and I felt really good, and I thought, okay, you just don't look back, pretend like you know what you're doing, and and just go to, you know, get home as soon as possible, get to that finish line as soon as possible, and just work your tail off and run really scared. And I did, so I never looked back, and I just tried to act like I was very confident, and it works.
Is that a psychological game people play in distance running? You mentioned don't look back.
Yeah.
Do you think if you see somebody and they look back at you,
it makes me think, oh, you're a little scared. You know, if I see someone who's in front of me who's pulled away and they're looking back, I'm like, okay, they're running, they're worried maybe about themselves. But if someone doesn't look back, that to me, that's a sign of like confidence, that they're more concerned with themselves than they are with anyone else. And to me, that was like, if I looked back, it would be like a sign of weakness to me. So I never wanted to look back.
That's so interesting. But then anyway, so you were saying running into the finish line, that finish at the New York Marathon was, you know, iconic. It was like some kind of meme around the world. It was, how did that feel that you became such an internet sensation?
That's just unfiltered and unbridled joy. Yeah. Like I never, you know, you dream about those moments over and over to keep you going through the training, mm-hmm. The moments of this just pure joy. And I never would have anticipated that I would have like been that excited, but I couldn't contain myself. I had so many close calls of having big moments or feeling like I didn't get my moment. And so to finally have it culminate, like, it just was one of those things. I wanted to soak it up, but I just couldn't contain my excitement. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's like sheer joy. Yeah, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. And was you the first American woman to win it in how long?
40 years. Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible.
So it was a long time coming.
Yeah, in the U.S., they went mental for that as
they
well.
They did. You know, I think growing up a little bit, I'd always been told, well, East Africans are better than you. Like, you're not as good, and you don't have as much talent. And I just felt like I didn't want that to be my story. I wanted to write a different story, and so I didn't want to fall into that belief system of that they're just better than me. So I think throughout my career, I've just said, well, if you really think they're better than me, then I'll just outwork them. So I just felt very validated in believing that I was capable of something like that.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. And then following that, next spring, you had the Boston Marathon, which is again,
oh gosh,
another story in
yes,
itself.
Yes, epically terrible conditions.
Yeah. So going into that race, there was a lot of talk about the awful conditions. I've never seen a marathon start quite like the Boston Marathon. Tell me a bit about that.
It was, you know, so yeah, I had heard that it was going to be bad conditions, but mm-hmm. I think as an athlete, you just have to be like, oh, it's not going to be that bad. But it was horrendous. You know, I've experienced two terrible marathons, one in which I was overheating, and Boston, which was hypothermia. Yeah. And if you said, hey, if you have to pick one, like, what would you pick going into a marathon, overheating or hypothermia? And I'd say I would overheat any day over hypothermia. It was the worst I have ever felt. I, like, can't believe I even made it to the finish line. In fact, I had to go back and watch the TV coverage because I'm like, I don't even remember the last half of the race. It's like I got to halfway, and then it's like a kind of a, I don't remember it. Wow. So it was really brutal. I've never even trained in conditions that bad.
Yeah.
So, I applaud anyone who finished that day. That's an achievement in itself.
Yeah.
But kind of sad in the sense that I felt like I was really fit and had another big moment in front of me, but definitely derailed with hypothermia, which is just out of your control. There's only so much you can do when your body starts to shut down like that. So it is what it is. But at the end of the day, another American won a major marathon, which, you know, just feeding on that momentum is huge for us. So
yeah, it was, I mean, you guys were running together, right? And then mm-hmm. I Was it you went to the bathroom?
Yes. Early on in the race, maybe only like 5 miles in, Desi turned to me and, you know, we were running quite slow because the conditions were just terrible. And she said, you know, today's not going to be my day. I think I'm going to drop out. So she said to me, is there anything I can do? If there's anything I can do to help you, you let me know. Like, we need the Americans to do well in this. And I said, oh, okay. I go, are you okay though? Like, she's like, yeah, no, I'm fine. I'm just, it's not going to be my day. I can just tell, like, I don't feel good. And I think at the time no one felt good, but I think she just was like, oh, this is not good. I don't feel great. And so she let me know that. And I said, okay. So I just kind of stored that away. And as we were getting to about like halfway through the race, I was like, I got to take a pit stop. Like, we're going so slow and I'm drinking all this fluid and I'm not digesting it because it was so cold. And I was like, we're going so slow. I'm just going to pull off and go to the bathroom, but I'll tell Des so that she knows. So she's not like freaked out if she sees me pulling off. And I said, hey Des, I'm going to pull over to the, and go to the bathroom. And she's like, okay, well, I'll try to slow down the race. And I said, okay. So I peeled off, was only in there literally for 13 seconds. People have it. They like clocked it. It was the 13 second pit stop. Came back out and, she couldn't slow down the race. They took off when they saw that I went to the bathroom. So they actually sped up because they're like, oh, she's gone. We're going to take off. And she actually hung back to help me regain on the pack. So she kind of like bridged that gap for me, helped me get back on the pack. And I think that kind of reinvigorated her. She said, that like all of a sudden her legs felt better. Like she woke up, like because she was running harder because we were running so slow.
Yeah.
We were actually getting colder the longer we were out there and running so slow that we weren't heating up.
Yeah.
And at that point, then she saw Molly, another American woman up front. And she said, oh, I'll go help Molly now. And so she just figured she'd be kind of like a you know, sacrificial lamb to help us. But then she ended up feeling great. I think all of a sudden this moment of not thinking about herself and thinking about other people, like she was able to then feel better. And then she's like, oh, actually I'm doing okay. Like I actually feel okay. And I think it just woke her up and made her realize she was going to be fine. And she felt better than almost everyone else. So she took it and went for it.
That's incredible.
It's crazy.
Yeah. That Boston Marathon men's and women's side was just like, oh, go down the street. Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely wild. But yeah, so looking ahead now, so we're here in Aarhus almost a year later, you're here more of a coaching side. What has coaching always been in your mind?
It has. You know, I've along the way when I've had teammates, I've always loved to like help my teammates. Obviously, we're all competitive when we get on the start line, but I feel like I've attained quite a bit of knowledge. My career's been long, and I've had a lot of experiences and had a lot of mistakes and learned a lot of things. And I always feel like if I learn something, I want to be able to share it and to have people avoid my mistakes that I made. I haven't made many, but I feel like I've learned a lot. So I feel like it's just a natural fit to want to help my teammates because if I make them better, it makes me better too. So I've always really enjoyed seeing the success of my teammates. And when you invest yourself in someone else and they have success, it feels just as good as if it's your own. And so I feel like that's the benefit. It's like, you know, I could have a bad day, but if a teammate has a good day, it like makes me feel good because I invested part of myself in them and they did well. And so it's just, I don't know, that reciprocal relationship is really meaningful to me. And so I love being here supporting them and helping them however I can.
And which Bowman ladies are here?
We have Muriel Hall, we have Carissa Schweitzer, and Courtney Fredericks.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Courtney, steeplechaser. Yeah. Carissa is super young. She's only 22, just came out of college. She's more of a 5K, kind of a 10K runner, not quite yet. And Muriel Hall is an Olympian in the 10,000 meters, but she can run 5K or 10K. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Versatile group.
Yeah.
Really exciting. Okay, well, Shalane, thank you so much for joining us on this episode. Before we go, so when this comes out, it'll be Monday. So we want you to try and predict who do you think is gonna win the men's and the women's race at the cross-country.
Individually,
if you could
predict. So I'm a huge fan of Joffrey.
Yeah.
From Kenya. He won New York. When we both won New York together, I got to spend quite a bit of time with him, and I think he's a lovely human being. Mm-hmm. I love him. So I'm hoping Joffrey has a great day.
Mm-hmm.
And then honestly, with the women, I have absolutely no idea because, you know, there's some favorite track runners that will be like some really great track runners, but I'm not so sure that this course is going to favor a track runner. So no. I think we're actually going to have a new star evolve. So I don't know who it'll be, but I'm going to lean towards someone who's actually more of like a marathon or road runner. I don't think it's going to be a track star. I think this course is just going to... it's mentally challenging, and it's not as smooth as a track, obviously. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure who that would be on the female side, but I would pick someone who has maybe a really good like half marathon time.
What do you think of the course?
It's extremely challenging. I've never seen anything like it. There's so many components that make it hard because there's literally no rhythm running in it. It's all either up or down. The only mm-hmm. flat sections actually have the water pit or the mud pit,
yeah.
or the one spot where like the Viking Village or where the fan zone is.
Yeah.
That's a flat spot, but it's like a huge rhythm breaker.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to take, you know, a really strong-minded person to get through it and have a very sound tactical race, because I think the last lap, a lot of people are going to be hurting really badly.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest, I'm happy I'm not racing. I am happy to be a fan
yeah.
and to cheer because I honestly don't think I would be very good at this course, but it's going to be very fun to watch.
Yeah, you picked a good year to sit out anyway.
Yeah.
Well, best of luck, Shalane, yeah. with any future running endeavors and coaching, and hopefully we'll see you very soon.
Thank you very much.
So Aarhus, it was a fantastic championship all around, great vibes. The Danish put on a brilliant show, of course, show stopping, quite literally for some of the athletes, stopped the show for them. But yeah, it was a really incredible day, and I think cross country on a global sense has kind of dipped the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
And I think this really brought it back to life again and reinvigorated it. I mean, even for me, I was always interested in it as a kid, but I know it kind of flew off my radar a little bit, and now I'm just, all for cross country.
It's really, really put it back on the map. Like you say, it was an event that was unfortunately dying out on a global scale. I mean, there's a lot of countries where it's huge in, but as a international event, it was on the downhill, and I think that was partly down to the courses that were being put on that just didn't, you know, it turned it into a track race essentially, and I think because of this now, there's going to be a huge interest in it. And when we look 2 years now, it's going to be in Australia.
And,
you know, those guys certainly put on an enormous, enormous show. And I think if they can get the course right as well, you know, I think cross country's back on the map.
Yeah, it's exciting times. And then, so earlier we were talking about looking ahead. We have Boston Marathon. We just had the London Marathon, and you'll be there as well.
Yeah, I'll be there in a few weeks' time for London. And you know, we can see the field that they've put together.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be a really special race. There's some real talent. I mean, obviously people will be looking at Elliot, of course, and Mo as well. But there's some exceptional talent which I think will push both of them mm-hmm. all the way. And I've no idea where that's going to go, that race, but London have done really well putting together a great field. And as a spectacle, there's not a lot of matches London Marathon, you know, the crowds and the actual location. It's just a superb race. And you know, we'll see what happens with the weather. Last year was absolutely roasting hot and it affected the race and the tactics. But we'll see. If we get some nice normal weather this year, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, loads to look forward to anyway. And then before you know it, we will be in Doha for the Diamond League, and then it'll be the World Relays. So things are looking rosy ahead, and really exciting times in the world of athletics. So that aside, just to wrap things up, if you want any more Aarhus content, you can head to IAAF.org and follow all of our social media channels. We'll be reflecting on the championships. As well as that, if you really want more of your Aarhus fix, you can go onto our YouTube channel and you can take a look at the World Athletics Club premiere. It's our new panel show featuring, this time it's Aarhus themed. We had Courtney Frericks, Matt Baxter and Joshua Cheptegei, the winner of the men's race, all featuring on the episode. So go take a look at that. It's really, really fun. Along with that, Dan, where can the lovely people find you on social media? Dan takes some incredible photos. I'm pretty sure it's like at Dan Vernon photo. Yeah, something like that.
That's the one.
Is it the same on Twitter and Instagram?
I think so. You don't want to follow me on Twitter. I'm pretty boring on Twitter. Just get political.
Just moaning about recycling, really.
Yeah.
People should recycle more, though, as a general yes. message. But yeah, anyway, go follow Dan because he takes some incredible photos, and you can check out some of his photos from Aarhus as well. you can find me at @_BenHarlow on Twitter. And yeah, I think that's it from us. But you will hear from us again in a month's time. Looking forward to the Diamond League and World Relays, as I said before. And yeah, I think that's it from Aarhus. So yeah, thank you for listening, guys. If you made it all the way through, do leave us a review, comment, rate, you know, all that stuff. And do send us any submissions you want for athletes to be featured in future episodes. Okay, cool. So, Dan, any last words?
Oh, thanks for having me.
All right, see you later, guys. Bye.